Congratulations. I'm very proud of all of you for showing up again. One thing I may not have said yesterday, that often the second day, I know most of you have done retreats, but I find that they are the fruit, and find that the second day often has this very beautiful quality of being one little field of quiet and non-harming and purity and sweetness. That's somewhat rare in this world. Get people quiet for a continuous basis in the middle of our daily life in a non-residential retreat. So I have some confidence from past experience that by showing up the second day, we give each other a gift of quiet. And I really also think that it has the more scientific effect of regulating our nervous system in a way that we are desperately in need of, because of what could be called the individualistic, disembodied nature of our cultural model of success and becoming, and as I spoke yesterday, the excessive use of our rational mind to manage our lives, and the abandonment of all of our other sense data for the wise use of our intuition, which requires a full embodied experience of one's life, a clarity. And when that's lost, and so much dependency on rational mind, it tends to create a lot of anxiety, because rational mind mostly is caught up, bound up in time, in going. And the more we're bound up in going, the more tense, the more association of well-being with what happens next, there's more anxiety, more worry. And that makes it really difficult to make wise decisions, to be responsive and caring in simple ways with ourselves and with each other. So the process of reclaiming, as you know, Thich Nhat Hanh said, you who are the richest person on earth, who've been going around begging for a living, stop being the destitute child, come home, reclaim your heritage. Your heritage is this very well-regulated nervous system that has the potential for great calm and ease. And that really is that calm and ease is the natural calm and ease of your nature, as I started with yesterday. So that the gift to yourself. And part of that process of gifting ourselves with calm and ease, clarity and peace, is the navigation of the third foundation of mindfulness, part of the key to secret to happiness, is becoming or being more emotionally articulate. We are, as individualistic, disembodied humans, and I don't want to characterize every, you know, don't hope you don't feel targeted in that way, just kind of the general collective. But we are fantastic at thinking about our feelings. We have our narratives down, our whys, and our what's the, there's an expression, that's my story and I'm going to stick with it. We're great at thinking about our feelings. We know their story. We're not great at feeling them. Just feeling them. Experiencing just this. I was just walking across the street. I took a little few minutes to take some deep breaths and walk across the street and just feeling the external weather. It's not so much analyzing it, not interpreting it, not creating a story about it, just feeling it. And our internal experience is very much like the external weather. It's internal weather. And rather than think about it so much, our meditative practice allows us to feel it. And the interesting thing about feeling it, thinking about it, tends to lead toward more disembodiment, tends to lead toward more experiencing our feelings as a problem to be solved, something wrong with us. Feeling it allows us to both understand the Dharma, that feelings are changing conditions, they're internal weather, and the very feelings that when we think about them send us on a path to somewhere else, when we feel them, they send us back to ourselves, back home, to the place we never really left that we only imagined we left. Given that none of us has really ever left the present moment. We've only and always been present our entire life. We've only imagined that we've left. There is only an unfolding now. And because of that, to be caught in an imagined past and future, we miss our life. We miss what's actually happening. So our feelings, as scary as they are because we're not used to feeling them, they are just a marvelous doorway or reminder that we're here. And, you know, once we're here, once we're feeling what we're feeling, getting used to the range of internal weather, it's not so bad here. It's not so bad. And it's been people who could accommodate in really intense situations and feeling them, even in the worst of times, people who could actually stay present were the beacons, the lights, the guides for, you know, the unsinkable Molly Brown. I think of her because my daughter's name is Molly. But she kept everyone buoyant because of her sense of immediacy, even in as the Titanic is sinking, or as they're out on these lifeboats. So we all have this capacity to be more emotionally articulate, able to feel. So I just talk about that now because that will be included in this morning's instruction. So it's all part of the same story of the put in the words of Ajahn Chah, don't let your mind leave your body. There will be a narrative that often gives rise to a memory, which is an amazing thing that we have memory. Not a problem. Amazing thing that we can narrate our experience and size it up and make it intelligible and and meaningful to us. But we can also, those thoughts generate feelings, and those feelings can bring us home or help us stay home. So when you feel something today, a state of the heart or state of mind, mood or emotion, notice the story that may be connected to it. Sometimes there's no story, sometimes it's just a state. But notice the story, but expand beyond that state and just immediately sense how that's being felt. And just and using the acronym that most of you have all heard if you've been around the Dharma scene, and this is one of the most mature sanghas. Notice I didn't say old sanghas. An acronym that's been very useful for people, that it really is an indivisible whole. It's not like different parts that you do for one thing and then the other, but the acronym of RAIN, where you recognize that feeling that's happening, you accept it, you allow it, you investigate it. And investigation in terms of the Dharma, I've been alluding to through the retreat, it's not the same kind of why. It's not the reflection on the historical self. It's really the investigation is, how has it felt? What's its feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant? What's its quality as it's felt? And most importantly, for realizing the Dharma and how everything that can be known to you through the doors of perception can be help you see the Dharma, what's really important about investigation is what happens to that experience when it is felt, when it's known. Noticing how it sometimes magnifies, gets larger, sometimes it fades, sometimes it morphs into something else. By noticing the nature of an experience that's happening, we can realize everything one needs to know about the nature of things. We see it comes, it goes. It comes and it goes by itself. It is selfless. The weather comes when it comes, according to conditions. We understand that so well about the external weather, but the internal weather is no different. The conditions arise. There may be a thought, feeling, it may go back to beginningless time, the history that gave rise to the feeling. But then there's not a little agent in there saying, now feel this, now feel that, now think this, now think that. They come, and we can realize that moment to moment. And in realizing the selfless, changing nature of our experience, something in us lets go. Let's go of the ownership. Let's go of the grasping. Let's go of the aversion. Of course, when we realize that we can accommodate something that feels really unpleasant and scary. So investigation is that. So there's recognition, allowing, investigating, and then that through the investigation, the end has many different, many people translate the end different, but originally it was about non-identification. It's the recognizing through the investigation that this is not me, this is not mine. This does not define me. It's a changing condition. The fact that it is changing and it's changing by itself is the selflessness of that experience expressed in time. So we just see the selflessness of moods and emotions. Ajahn Sumedho says, do you think, he says these moods and emotions, they're like sand grains of the Ganges River. He says, you think you have to emotionally react to every sand grain in the Ganges River? Being excited over the beautiful and horrified over the... He says, just see that they're all changing conditions. It's like the sand grains of the Ganges River, and they all flow. So recognize, accept, or allow, investigate, and not me, not mine, or non-identification. Okay, so let's sit. Let's marinate. Just as you're settling in, I wanted to make this really just feeling really relevant to our world. You know, just the inability to feel has created such a cycle of suffering. How easy it is to project our unfelt feelings into blame and demand. And I think that the theologian, psychologist Sam Keen spoke so beautifully about this when he talked about he titled this one passage, Substituting Grief for Anger. And just put it in perspective of the world as we settle in. To lessen the quantity of cruelty and sadism, we must learn to listen to the cry beneath the violence. The victor must hear himself in the victim's cry, the winner feel himself in the humiliation of the loser. So long as we can visit pain on another, we need not feel our own pain. Anger lifts depression for a time, purging our rage on a scapegoat relieves us of the feeling. But the need for the cleansing of the unacceptable feelings builds up, and we must plunge into a new cycle or circle of violence. The only certain way out of the blind ritual of war is by learning to substitute grief for anger. Those who mourn the childhood love they never had, who treat their own wounds tenderly, learn to forgive and to break the vicious cycle of the wounded and the wounding. When we're unable to confess that our own parents, our own governments, our own styles of life have disappointed and injured us, we will inevitably create an enemy on whom we heap our anger. Every day we are not grieving is a day we will be taking vengeance. So our emotional articulation really prevents us from dumping. Something I have a tendency to do. I don't know about you. Anyway, we are here again, and how do we know we're here? Because we are aware, and we are embodied. So within this fathom-long body lies the world that we experience. And so this is not the idea of the world, but the immediate felt sense, a direct experience. So the more sensitive we are to this body, the more we feel it, the more we connect with the world right where it connects with us. We ease ourselves into it just where it is, just where we are. We feel our back body and sense that and realize there is no past back there. It's just space and the felt sense of the back body. We feel our front body. We realize there's no future there. There's just this felt experience of our body rising and falling with each breath. Sensations of the heart, belly, genital area, arms and legs. As we let our body go into this gentle stillness, let it feel like it's melting into the openness of our practice, like a block of ice left out in the sun. We very gently, without force, without strain, we keep gathering our attention to this vital point, this single point, here, just this moment, just this body, just this breath, just these sensations. Relying for one or two more sittings on the support of our body as a primary anchor, some place in our body that we can return to. Stay with intimately as long as it lasts. The more refined, developed, and connecting and sustaining with our body, breath, or sensations, the more continuity of awareness, the more we are able to notice the other experiences that will sometimes call our attention. When sounds arise, we effortlessly are aware of hearing. other sensations. It becomes stronger than the general sensations of breath or hands or body. We immediately fill our awareness and we sense their quality and what happens to them. Aching, burning, stabbing, itching, tingling, squeezing, cool, warm, throbbing, pulsing. And states of the heart and mind. Common states we spoke of yesterday, the wanting mind, the aversive mind, the restless, worried mind, the doubting mind, the dull mind. We notice these things. We feel them through our body. Come out of whatever narrative. We notice what happens to them. Other states of the mind, calm, agitation, ease, spaciousness, balance. Gentleness, love, other strong emotions, anger, fear, grief. They often come with a little story. We expand beyond the story to feel these feelings. Recognize them as changing conditions, as internal weather. When they are no longer predominant or compelling or have faded away, in support of remaining anchored to the living present, we connect again with our primary anchor, our home base. Gathering and sustaining. Interested and kind attention to this moment just as it is, with a relaxed attitude. Celebrate that moment when you realize you've been lost in thought. This is a moment of mindfulness shining through. No need to judge. Relax. Reorient yourself to real time by placing your mind in your body and your body in your mind. Gathering. Sustaining. Continuity of awareness as long as it lasts. No judgment, no strain, no tension, just connecting, being aware of the body, sounds, moods. Whatever's unfolding in this timeless present. Settling back into the moment. Letting go. Letting be. As is. when you hear the sound of the gong, just be aware of hearing. After the sound fades and you're ready to open your eyes, be aware of the experience of opening your eyes. Be aware of the arising of outer sight, seeing, and then be aware of any other movements that you make. The practice continues. Continuity of awareness.